Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Okay, I hope you had a good weekend. It is MLK Day, and I'm going to spend most of the show today talking about that. I want to go through some things here that every time, when this rolls around every year, and I hope you had a good weekend, by the way, when this rolls around every year, whether it's the I Have a Dream speech, which I'm going to play in its entirety. If you want to watch on Facebook Live, you'll watch footage from it, and you'll hear the whole thing, which is about 16 and a half, 17 minutes long. I'm going to spend the second half of the show revisiting it. It's such an important, one of the most important speeches ever given in America, and certainly has a message that still resonates and great prophetic truth that we need to hear. But it always reminds me of the fight for life as well. Now, the big difference here is Martin Luther King Jr. and all the forces that marshaled around him, as they should have, were speaking up for themselves and for their brothers and sisters of color, and then others joined it. But mostly, obviously, it was people of color fighting against the injustice of racism and institutional racism and Jim Crow laws and all that stuff. So they were able to speak for themselves. But in the case of the life issue, which we talked about on Friday and which some churches observed yesterday, they can't speak. The children can't speak for themselves. So we're speaking for them. So there are always overlaps. And I believe that Martin Luther King Jr. would have been a great voice for life had he lived. He would have been 91 today. And so that's where I want to spend some time. In Letters from a Birmingham Jail, I want to read some parts from that. And again, not taking away the primary cause of that, the primary focus of that, but to also include, because it's haunting when you think of it this way, also include the nature of his comments relative to the issue of life. But before that, you may have noticed, and I put out a call for prayer earlier today on Facebook, and my page is there, for they do it every year in Virginia, in Richmond, Virginia, kind of a lobbying day, but this year obviously took off for the pro-Second Amendment rights rally, which also was a expression of the First Amendment right to peaceably assemble for a redress of grievances. And so a good friend of mine, Sharon Dooley, who also is a great warrior for life and spends many, many hours every week out in front of an abortion clinic here in Raleigh, was up there today. And so we will get a firsthand account. Sharon, how are you? Thanks for calling in.
You.
Pretty good, thank you. So, well, just tell us, first of all, Sharon, why you went up there and then what you experienced and who you met. Just kind of take us into what that was like being up in Richmond today.
You know, it was really great because we heard so many terrible things, you know, that there would be confiscation of phones or guns at the border and blockage, you know, of exits off the highway and, you know, the kill box with, you know, around the Capitol itself. And so we went with trepidation, but we really felt like it was our duty as Americans, my husband and I, to just go up there and support Virginians and support our Constitution. So we went up, and we didn't see any of the problems we heard. And as we were bussed in, we started seeing a lot more people, and finally got to the Capitol area. People are open carrying. There's tactical weapons.
Yeah, oh yeah.
There's every kind of situation you can imagine, and 100% peace. I have never met, I was telling my husband, it'd be funny if we went to any other kind of rally, particularly a woman's rally or something like that. Nobody would be as kind as we felt these people were today. We didn't see one problem. The police said they had no problem. We saw international reporters from Norway, somewhere else in Europe, Mexico. I know that there were people that came out from Ohio, Michigan, Montana, from all over, because everybody knows if that state falls,
yeah,
you know, if that state succeeds and getting your gun, well, that's just a domino, and other governors will try to do gun grabs. And we're just really grateful to have been here to tell everyone it was perfect, it was fine, it was safe, and just to the glory of God. Oh, and I did want to tell you, we met a gentleman named Leon Benjamin. We saw him on the street. When we walked up to him, we heard him preaching, and then he said a prayer, and my husband went over and talked to him. As it turns out, he's a Gulf War veteran. He's a pastor. He's become a leader in the city, the chairman for the Republican Party of Richmond and the pastor at New Life Harvest Church. And he's running for Congress.
Oh, that's awesome.
And yes, and I think situations like what we saw today in Richmond has woken a lot of people up, because we're not that far away from having our rights taken from us. And men like this guy are on it. We met all kinds of people like this today. So we were so glad to be here.
And there were so many people. You're welcome. And there were so many, you know, there was kind of two zones there. They had to go through security to get into up on the actual hill, the grass where the Capitol was. And that was a gun-free zone. But everybody outside, because open carry is the law of the land still in Virginia. And what was that like? Because you look at pictures. I mean, you see people with AR-15s. I mean, people all geared out. They have their vests on. I mean, a lot of people, the left's going ballistic because they just look like a bunch of ignorant white males to them. But how did that make you feel? Because in this case, you had a bunch of decent people with guns, and that's not a threat.
We felt so safe. My husband and I kept saying to each other, if anyone tries to pull anything, it's going to be stopped immediately. I mean, everyone's head was on a swivel, you know, because we all thought something was going to come down.
Yeah.
But there was no possible way. There was no way. You know, police presence was everywhere, and they were wonderful, by the way. And, you know, for us seeing all of those, my husband walked up to one group because I asked him, do you think that's a militia or an actual military unit? And I don't think they would give him an answer, but they're probably the ones you're talking about that were just all decked out in all the gear. I'm not sure who they were, but I took pictures of them. I'll send you pictures.
Yeah, good.
I don't know who they were, but no one was afraid. No one.
Yeah, that's so good to hear. Well, we were praying about it, and I didn't know you were up there, but as soon as I saw you post on Facebook, I'm like, I got to get a hold of Sharon. And so she called in and shared with us from the front line. As always, Sharon, you always tend to be there. Thank you so much for taking the time to call in. God bless you, sister. I look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you, Steve. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. This is Steve Noble, MLK Day. A lot to talk about there. Letter from a Birmingham jail. The second half of the show, I don't know if you've ever heard the entire I Have a Dream speech, but we're going to play the whole thing. It takes about 16 minutes, and it's worth your time. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. It was great to hear from our friend Sharon Dooley, who really is a wonderful woman of God, and I see her often out in front of one of the abortion clinics here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And she also happens to go to Bishop Patrick L. Wooden Senior's Church, the Upper Room Church of God in Christ, and so that's mostly made up of people that are active in their faith and willing to engage in the culture and to show up in the streets, especially for the cause of life. But she felt that. Did you hear that? She and her husband felt it was important to be there just in terms of protecting rights in general. And Martin Luther King knew that. There was a moral imperative. And you'll hear this in the I Have a Dream speech, which I'm going to play in the final two segments of the show. I'm going to play the whole thing. It'll take up most of the last two segments of the show. Not all of it, but most of it. And if you're watching on Facebook Live, we're actually going to play the video, so you'll be able to watch part of that on the screen. So if you want to join us on Facebook Live, The Steve Noble Show is the page on Facebook. Nice and easy, The Steve Noble Show, and you can join us there. But this moral imperative, and when you stand by while others' people's rights are being denied, don't be surprised when all of a sudden you're the next one up on the chopping block. And that was something that deeply discouraged Martin Luther King Jr., was that the church did not show up in this great moral cause in the civil rights movement. The church, the white church, largely was absent. And that was a big reason why he wrote letters from a Birmingham jail, because he was getting hammered for going down to Birmingham. He was from Alabama, and so he was getting hammered by church people and by Jewish leaders. And so he wrote this incredible letter. And I'm just going to share some parts of it, and the reason I'm sharing it is to put it in the context of the issue of life. Yesterday was Sanctity of Life Sunday in churches. 22nd is Sanctity of Human Life Day, which is in 2 days. And so just listen to it for its original context. dealing with the civil rights movement, but also listen to it in terms of the life issue, the abortion issue, okay? Because it's truth is powerful and can turn on any subject that's going against God's word. So this is early on in the letter. I'm in Birmingham because injustice is here. Just as the prophets of the 8th century BC left their villages and carried their thus saith the Lord far beyond the boundaries of their hometowns, and just as the Apostle Paul left his village of Tarsus and carried the gospel of Jesus to the far corners of the Greco-Roman world, so I am compelled to carry the gospel of freedom beyond my own hometown. Like Paul, I must constantly respond to the Macedonian call for aid. This is a letter from a Birmingham jail. I cannot sit idly by in Atlanta and not be concerned about what happens in Birmingham. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Again, I would encourage you, put that into the context of the life conversation, okay, of abortion. Listen to this. This is particularly powerful. A little bit later in the letter. We know through painful experience that freedom is never voluntarily given by the oppressor. It must be demanded by the oppressed. Stop there. Here's the problem. The oppressed in terms of the life issue, and I believe Martin Luther King Jr. would have been a great voice for life and against abortion, obviously. I really believe that. I really think he would have stood there on the front lines for it. It must be demanded by the oppressed. Well, in this case, the oppressed, the murdered, can't stand for themselves. That's why you and I are called to that fight. That's why Sharon Dooley goes out there in front of the abortion clinic every week. We're called to be their voice, the voice of the oppressed. We have waited, Dr. King writes, for more than 340 years for our constitutional and God-given rights. The nations of Asia and Africa are moving with jet-like speed toward gaining political independence, but we still creep at horse and buggy pace toward gaining a cup of coffee at a lunch counter. Perhaps it's easy for those who have never felt the stinging darts of segregation to say, wait. But when you have seen vicious mobs lynch your mothers and fathers at will and drown your sisters and brothers at whim, when you have seen hate-filled policemen curse, kick, and even kill your black brothers and sisters, when you see the vast majority of your 20 million Negro brothers smoldering in an airtight cage of poverty in the midst of an affluent society, when you suddenly find your tongue twisted and your speech stammering as you seek to explain to your six-year-old daughter why she can't go to the public amusement park that has just been advertised on television, and see tears welling up in her eyes when she is told that Funtown is closed to colored children, and see ominous clouds of inferiority beginning to form in her little mental sky and see her beginning to distort her personality by developing an unconscious bitterness toward white people, when you have to concoct an answer for a five-year-old son who is asking, Daddy, why do white people treat colored people so mean? When you take a cross-country drive and find it necessary to sleep night after night in the uncomfortable corners of your automobile because no motel will accept you, when you're humiliated day in and day out by signs reading white and colored, when your first name becomes N-I-G-G-E-R, your middle name becomes boy, however old you are, and your last name becomes John, and your wife and mother are never given the respected title Mrs., then you will understand why we find it difficult to wait. There comes a time when the cup of endurance runs over and men are no longer willing to be plunged into the abyss of despair. See, the thing here is that he could speak for himself. He could speak for his race, and other people, other African Americans, could speak for themselves, unlike dead children who can't, which is why you and I must. Do you see the parallel here? It should haunt all of us. He said this to the church. Let me find this part. This was to the church. And about being an extremist. In my body, the marks of the Lord Jesus. Was not Martin Luther an extremist? Here I stand. I cannot do otherwise. So help me God. And John Bunyan. I will stay in jail to the end of my days before I make a butchery of my conscience. And Abraham Lincoln. This nation cannot survive half slave and half free. All these people were called extremists for standing up for truth. So don't worry about it when the world calls you an extremist for standing up for life. Okay? I'm going to finish with this part. And then when we come back, you'll hear the I Have a Dream speech in full. I have traveled the length and breadth of Alabama, Mississippi, and all other southern states. On sweltering summer days, he writes, and crisp autumn mornings, I've looked at the South's beautiful churches with their lofty spires pointing heavenward. Over and over again, I've found myself asking, what kind of people worship here? Who is their God? Where were their voices when the lips of Governor Barnett dripped with words of interposition and nullification? Where were they when Governor Wallace called a clarion call for defiance and hatred? Where were their voices of support when bruised and weary Negro men and women decided to rise from the dark dungeons of complacency to the bright hills of creative protest? Where are we, I would add, when it comes to the life issue? Yes, Dr. King writes, these questions are still in my mind. In deep disappointment, I've wept over the laxity of the church. But be assured that my tears have been tears of love. There can be no deep disappointment where there is no deep love. Yes, I love the church. How could I do otherwise? Yes, I see the church as the body of Christ. But oh, how we have blemished and scarred that body through social neglect and through fear of being nonconformists. What a great word for us with the life issue. There was a time when the church was very powerful, he writes, and the time when the early Christians rejoiced at being deemed worthy to suffer for what they believed. In those days, the church was not merely a thermometer that recorded the ideas and principles of popular opinion. It was a thermostat that transformed the mores of society. But the judgment of God is upon the church as never before, he later writes. If today's church does not recapture the sacrificial spirit of the early church, it will lose its authenticity, forfeit the loyalty of millions, and be dismissed as an irrelevant social club with no meaning for the 20th century. Now, if that's not prophetic, I don't know what is. And he was right. Where is the church? Where was the white church in this particular case? In the issue of abortion, where is the church? White, black, and otherwise. Hispanic, Korean, Japanese, whatever. Where is the church? I'm convinced Martin Luther King Jr. would have the same rallying cry today through tears. Where is the church? At least most of African Americans in those days and even today can still speak for themselves. The unborn can't. That falls on you and it falls on me. When we come back, the entire I Have a Dream speech, one of the most incredible speeches ever given on American soil. This is Steve Noble and the Steve Noble Show, MLK Day. We'll be right back. Platform. So whether it's iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or iHeartRadio, whatever, you can pretty much find it anywhere. And listen to old shows and check out things and go to the website, thestevenobleshow.com, and grab it there. Plus, on the website, you can search by topic. So if you want to, if any shows we've done on racism, homosexuality, government, Trump, whatever, all those keywords are in there. So when you put in the search box, you'll pull up shows, podcasts, as well as if there's any blog posts. But the blog post mostly is all about the Daily Dose, which is the daily devotional that I write. Literally today we finished the Book of Psalms. That's 150 Daily Dose devotionals in the Book of Psalms. Tomorrow, turning into the, and these are going to be shorter, the Book of Psalms, those were a little longer because trying to write one devotional for one psalm is not easy. But we're going into what's been called the Proverbs of the New Testament, which is the Book of James. So we're starting the Book of James tomorrow. Those come out each weekday morning. They're going to take us about, that'll take us about 11 weeks. I think I have 55 of them in the Book of James. So those will start tomorrow. So if you'd like to get those in your email, all you need to do is text the word DOSE, D-O-S-E, text the word DOSE to 66866, and boom, you'll get signed up and get the Daily Dose devotional in your email. And again, we're starting the Book of James tomorrow. I also put it on Facebook, so if you follow the Steve Noble Show page on Facebook or me personally, they get posted there as well. So the Daily Dose, turning into the Book of James tomorrow, just text the word DOSE to 66866. For the remainder of the show, we're going to listen to the I Have a Dream speech from Martin Luther King Jr., given there in Washington in the shadows of the Lincoln Memorial, one of the most important speeches ever given in America, and on a number of different levels. But just want us all to, I hope you'll stay with us and plug in and listen. If you're on Facebook Live, you'll see some video of it. But this is such an important speech for us to revisit. And I often think, like I've mentioned, I have the abortion issue in the background as I hear him speaking about civil rights, because in many, many ways, there's a lot of overlap there. So let's dive right into this. Super important.
At this time, I have the honor to present to you the moral leader of our nation. I have the pleasure to present to you Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. Five score years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. And so we've come here today to dramatize the shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. So we've come to cash this check, a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy.
Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summit of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until that is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hope that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges. But that is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must forever conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protests to degenerate into physical violence.
We're listening to the I Have a Dream speech, of course, from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It is MLK Day here in America. Just playing the whole thing. We're about halfway through. We'll hear the rest of it when we come back. This is the Steve Noble Show on here in North Carolina, celebrating MLK Day. We'll pick it up there when we come back right after this. 'Cause you are more than I could ever dream. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, MLK Junior Day. We're listening to his I Have a Dream speech, August 28th, 1963, there in the shadows of the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. And certainly one of the most impactful, one of the most important speeches really ever given in the history of this nation. We're about halfway through it, and we're going to finish up the rest of the show. Most people have never actually heard this entire speech. It only takes about 17 minutes to get through the whole thing, dripping with some scripture and biblical allusions, not illusions, and just so powerful. It's just beautiful speech, an incredible orator, and an incredible cause for justice and peace and equality. And again, whenever I listen to this and whenever I go down this road, I can't help but think about our current cause on the issue of life. So keep that in the background as you listen to Dr. King finish up his speech. I Have a Dream speech, August 28th, 1963.
Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. And the marvelous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to a distrust of all white people. For many of our white brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is tied up with our destiny. And they have come to realize that their freedom is inextricably bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone. And as we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied. As long as our bodies, heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the cities. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro's basic mobility is from a smaller ghetto to a larger one. We can never be satisfied as long as our children are stripped of their selfhood and robbed of their dignity by signs stating for whites only. We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No, no, we are not satisfied and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I am not unmindful that some of you have come here out of great trials and tribulations. Some of you have come fresh from narrow jail cells. Some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms of persecution and staggered by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffering. Continue to work with the faith that unearned suffering is redemptive. Go back to Mississippi. Go back to Alabama. Go back to South Carolina. Go back to Georgia. Go back to Louisiana. Go back to the slums and ghettos of our northern cities. Knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friend, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. Every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, tears of thee. Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring from the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire. Let freedom ring from the mighty mountains of New York. Let freedom ring from the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania. Let freedom ring from the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado. Let freedom ring from the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, and when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last."
And there you have it. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s incredible speech. I mean, just a mind-boggling, off the hook, impactful, important, truthful clarion call. It's a clarion call, really, for all of us. And of course, the primary issue in the context in which it was given was the fight for civil rights, for equal rights, civil rights, which is such a blight on our nation's history, from chattel slavery all the way through Jim Crow laws and segregation and that nightmare. Which has continued into not still the presence of racism, which is still alive and unfortunately well, not in the same form that it was then, but it's still there. But I hear that speech and I listen to his words and I can't help but think about the children who can't hear that speech, who can't march on Washington, who can't stand outside of an abortion clinic and cry out for their own dignity, their own safety. They can't cry out. That's why we have to. So I move from that issue, which is primary when he gave the speech. And I believe Martin Luther King Jr. would be one of the biggest proponents of the life issue today. But every time you hear those things, put it in the life issue context, because it has just as much power there as it did with the racism issue when he first uttered those words a long time ago. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.